Health and Social Services Committee will now come to order. Today is Tuesday, March 17th. The time is 3:32. We are in Butrovich Room 205. Members present are Senator Klayman, Vice Chair Giesel, and myself, Chair Dunbar. Senator Myers is excused, and we're hoping for Senator Tobin later. Let the record reflect that we have a quorum to conduct business. Before we begin, I would like to thank Mary Gwen Kawakami, the Senate Health and Social Services Recording Secretary, and Susan Quigley from the Juno LIO for staffing the committee today. We have three items on our agenda. First, before the committee for the second time, we have Senate Bill 272, Health Information Exchange. Today, we will take public testimony on this bill and look to the will of the committee. Next, we will have an initial hearing for SB 240, Senior Citizens Grants Dividend Raffle, a committee bill from Senate State Affairs. Finally, we will hear HCR 4, Myositis Awareness Month, a resolution from Representative Sadler, which will be its first hearing. To begin, we have Senate Bill 272. Let the record reflect we've been joined by Senator Tobin. Senate Bill 272, Health Information Exchange. At our previous hearing, we heard an introduction to the bill along with invited testimony. Today, we will hear public testimony on 272. An amendment deadline was set for this bill Monday, March 16th at 5 p.m., and we received no amendments. Here to provide brief remarks on the bill, we have Ariel Harbison, the committee aide, to provide a brief recap. Also available online for questions, we have Kendra Sticka, the executive director of Health eConnect, and Jason Ball, the chief data officer of the Department of Health. Ms. Harbison, could you please put yourself on the record and begin?
Chair Dunbar and members of the Senate Health and Social Services Committee, thank you for allowing me to present on this bill today. My name is Ariel Harbison, staff to Senator Dunbar. Just a quick recap on SB 272, Health Information Exchange. Really, this bill is looking to update and improve the electronic health records law in Alaska. A couple of the key things that it does, really, it's providing clarity in the division of responsibilities between the Department of Health and the designee that administers the HIE system. The other thing that it does is it adds a representative to the governing body that represents the represents behavioral health providers.
Very good. Okay, at this time, I'm going to open public testimony. Is there anyone in the audience who would like to testify on this bill? Seeing none, is there anyone online? I don't see anyone. Is there anyone signed up to testify? No. Okay. I'm going to close public testimony. Any final discussions from members? No? Madam Vice Chair, do we have a motion?
Mr. Chairman, I move Senate Bill 272, version 3-4, LS1383/A as in alpha, from committee with individual recommendations and attached zero fiscal note. Legislative legal has authority to make any necessary conforming changes.
Are there any objections? Seeing none, SB 272 version A moves from committee with individual recommendations and attached fiscal notes. We'll now take a brief at ease to sign the paperwork. back on the record. Next, we have Senate Bill 240, Senior Citizens Grant Dividend Raffle, before the committee. This is its initial hearing. Here to introduce the bill, we have Mr. Joe Hayes, staff to Senator Kawasaki. Senator Kawasaki is currently at a different committee. So, Mr. Hayes, would you please put yourself on the record and begin your testimony?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Joe Hayes, staff to Senate State Affairs Committee. And I'd like to do the sponsor statement for Senate Bill 240. Senate Bill 240 creates a new voluntary way for Alaskans to support senior services across the state by establishing the Senior Citizen Grant Endowment Fund and the Senior Citizen Grant Dividend Raffle Fund. Senate Bill 240 allows Alaskans to donate a portion of their permanent fund dividend on a voluntary basis to support grants for nonprofit organizations that serve Alaskan senior citizens. To encourage participation, the bill also establishes a dividend raffle, providing contributors with the opportunity to win prizes while supporting a meaningful public purpose. The bill is designed to be self-funded and voluntary. It does not require new general fund appropriations and instead relies on individual choice and private contributions. Funds collected would be administered by the Department of Revenue and used to support organizations that provide critical services to seniors, including assistance that helps older Alaskans remain independent, healthy, and connected to their communities. As Alaska population continues to age, many senior services providers are facing increased demand and rising costs. Senate Bill 240 offers a creative Alaska-specific solution to build on an existing system Alaskans are familiar with, the Alaska Permanent Fund Dividend, to strengthen long-term solutions support for seniors without increasing taxes or mandatory fees. This legislation gives Alaskans a new opportunity to invest directly in the well-being of our seniors and organizations that serve them, while ensuring transparency, accountability, and voluntary participation. We look forward to gaining your support for this important legislation.
Thank you, Mr. Hayes. Were you about to add something?
No, Mr. Chair, I was wondering if you want me to quickly go through the sectional, or do you want me to open for questions? Or
I think we will allow the sectional for now. We do have someone for invited testimony. We have Ms. Vivian Stiver, the director of Moore Street Senior Housing, on Teams. Can we call that person up, or is it just oh, there they are. All right, look at that. What a time to be alive. We also have Mr. Tony Newman available for questions from Senior Disability Services. So why don't we go now to invited testimony. Ms. Stiver, could you please put yourself on the record and begin your testimony?
Thank you, Chairman Denmark. I'm Vivian Stiver, and I appreciate the committee hearing my testimony today. I will work my way through this. I have to forewarn you, I get extremely nervous and I cannot see the written word on the page. So I'm going to do the best I can. Hopefully you have a copy. Creating a dedicated revenue stream to support seniors who choose to remain in Alaska and age in their home communities, surrounded by family, culture, and familiar connections is a vital part in caring for our seniors in a dignified and respectful manner. Alaska's older residents consistently have identified access to food, transportation, and housing among their top concerns. I want to pause here. In the bill, there is a section. It divides the funds into 50% for home delivered meals, 25% for transportation, and 25% for housing support services. And the reason we broke that down is because these three items, when they're surveyed on the Commission of Alaska, or the Alaska Commission on Aging, these three items are in the top five consistently, just reversing order from year to year. But these are consistent concerns across the board. And again, for full disclosure, I do sit on the Commission of Aging. Just so you know, I'm here as Vivian Stiver, private citizen. This legislation addresses these priorities by establishing additional stable ongoing funding to meet those needs. Alaska is experiencing the fastest per capita growth in its senior population of any state, making current funding levels insufficient. New funding is intended as an additional revenue source, not a replacement for existing funds. to help meet the increasing demand for services and the rising costs. By 2050, our Alaska seniors 60 and older are projected to comprise 24% of the state's population. By 2030, seniors 80 and older are estimated to grow from 20,228 to over 29,000. Currently, we are seeing numerous parts of the state with wait lists for Meals on Wheels program, in-home services such as housekeeping, and limited transportation funding. In Fairbanks, at any given time, the Fairbanks Senior Center's Meals on Wheels program has a 20 to 30 wait list for seniors in need of food. But please note, the wait list number can be misleading as numerous seniors, when there is a wait list, are discouraged and do not sign up. In your bill packet is a copy of the 2024 Senior Snapshot, which is an excellent source of more detailed information, which is easy to read and covers many senior issues. The updated 2025 snapshot will be out around the first week of May. Currently in the state, we have two sources of income for senior-based services: flat federal funding and constrained state funding, depending on the year. A third option is needed to not only serve current seniors, but to address increases in costs for labor, food, transportation, and the expansion of these services to meet the rapidly growing need going forward. All these services, when adequately available to our senior population, allow seniors to remain in their home communities, surrounded by family, culture, and familiar connections. Concerns have been raised in two areas: the endowment and the raffle components. The endowment within the bill mirrors the endowment which is in the PFD education raffle framework. I do not know why the $1 billion was chosen, but I would encourage you to call upon the actuaries in the Department of Revenue, who I assume were involved in drafting the PFD education raffle bill. Having an endowment, I believe, is wise, as it provides for the future. Amending the bill to allow for direct donations to the endowment from the PFD will allow those of us who are opposed to participating in a raffle to use an alternative method which aligns with our principles, and could also encourage corporate donations directly into the fund. All donations should be tax deductible, as government is a nonprofit organization. That line right there is a guess by me. I don't know that they'll be tax deductible. I hope so. Next paragraph. Aging is universal. These funds will ultimately benefit every Alaskan, either by meeting the needs of someone's grandmother or grandfather, mother or father, and eventually every one of us here today. As the saying goes, in a blink of an eye. Let's prepare for the needs of our seniors now to ensure dignity in the aging process by being prepared to deliver these basic services. I want to thank you for the opportunity today to speak on SB 240. Communication is not a one-time event. I look forward to an ongoing dialogue, which will result in us successfully addressing the need for funding for our senior services. I am glad and available for questions anytime. You can feel free to give me a call, or if you have any questions now, I'll be happy to answer them. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Thank you, Ms. Stiver. Does anyone have any questions for Ms. Stiver? This is a question for Mr. Hayes. Okay, go ahead, Senator Tobin.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just out of curiosity, Mr. Hayes, what is the financial shortfall right now for these services provided to seniors? What is the – how much are we trying to make up through this program?
Through the chair, Senator Tobin, I'm not sure there's a shortfall right now, but there will be one in the future. And so what we're trying to do is to come up with a new revenue stream for seniors. As we know, the population is aging at a rapid pace. And this seemed like a creative way to bring in new funds, tapping off of a idea that was manifested in this body by a former member. So.
Yes, Senator Tobin.
Thank you. Do you, and just out of curiosity, so that we're not sure what the delta is right this moment, do we anticipate that this fund will meet all of the needs, or will there need to be additional state appropriations?
Through the chair, Senator Tobin, we would hope one day we'll have an endowment, And at that point, you know, like any endowment, hopefully that'll be able to provide a large amount of funding for the senior population. But we don't know when that delta will be.
Thank you.
Thank you. Other questions? Senator Klayman.
Just it looks like this will essentially, for dividend monies, it'll be competing with the education raffle.
Through the chair, Senator Klayman. It won't be competing. I guess it will be competing. It's kind of like pick, click, and give. So you can pick if you want to give money to the education raffle, you can. If you want to give money to the senior raffle, you can. If you want to give to both, if you want to give it anything else, and to. So it's actually, I guess it depends on what your flavor is in many respects.
Yes, Senator Klayman.
And it's structured similarly that it's 100 to. To get one raffle ticket, it's $100 of the same as the education raffle.
Through the chair to Senator Klayman. Yes, sir.
Thank you.
Thank you, Senator Klayman. My question, Mr. Hayes, I don't think it's to you, and I don't think there's anyone online that could answer this. And so perhaps our next hearing, we could hear someone from, I believe it would be the Department of Revenue. But looking at the endowment fund language, I'm looking at the education language on page 4. I assume, if I could find it, the similar language would be in the senior, which is, there it is. This is the $1 billion she's talking about. When the average market value for the fiscal year exceeds $1 billion, transfer 4.5% of the average fiscal year market value of the balance of the fund to the last fiscal year, et cetera. Similarly, on page 4, it says when the balance of the education dividend raffle fund exceeds $300 million, then they'll transfer the amount to the endowment fund. And so my question is, again, this is not for you, Mr. Hayes, but for the department in the future is, well, what if we never get close? You know, what if we raise $70 million or $100 million, but it never gets close to $300 million, it never gets close to $1 billion? Have we sort of stranded money somewhere that that won't really be put to productive use for a very long time? $1 billion is a lot of money for people to voluntarily donate. I imagine it would take many years to get there. So if you happen to know the answer to that, Mr. Hayes, great to hear it. But if not, perhaps something that you could work with the department on, Department of Revenue, I think, and find out, well, how much is in the Education Endowment Fund? How long did that take to raise? And how long do they think it will be until we're capitalized on the Senior Endowment Fund?
Through the chair to Senator Dunbar, it's a pretty interesting question. So in the other body, they did ask a similar question. So right now, the education raffle has raised $6,555,200. And of that amount, $3 million has gone directly to Department of Education, so supplemental grants, $1.6 million to the Education Endowment Fund, and $1.6 million to the raffle fund pool prize. So they're already paying out, and as you can tell, $1 million is a long way from $1 billion, but there's money that's being generated. It's going to be a long time. But
how many years has the education raffle been in effect?
Through the chair to Senator Dunbar, 7 years, if I'm not mistaken.
So $1.6 million in 7 years would imply, I don't know, like $250,000 a year, which would mean we would get to $300 million in, what, 1,200 years? So I think that sort of speaks to my concern. But again, I'd like to hear from the Department of Revenue on that. I might have done that math wrong, too. Maybe it was 120 years. Anyone have any follow-up questions? I'm not seeing any. Oh, sorry, Senator Giesel.
Well, Mr. Sherman, I guess I am confused by the bill. Because as I read the sponsor statement, it's talking about seniors. I read the sectional, and it's about seniors. But several sections of bills have to do with the education dividend raffle, and it's not even in the title of the bill.
This is
kind of weird. I mean, what is the education raffle doing in this bill?
Through the chair to Senator Giesel, The bill was crafted out from the education raffle. And so I do believe the sectional is addressing the parts of the educational raffle that this bill is mirroring. So it really has nothing to do with the education raffle outside of it was the purpose. It was the anchor that created the bill.
I think if I could help you, Mr. Hayes, I think what's happening is it used to just be called the dividend raffle fund. But now since you're creating a new one, you have to specify there's an education dividend raffle fund and a senior dividend raffle fund.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm surmising that.
Yeah.
I understand that the word education is underlined, which means it's an additional word. Yeah. And again, I go back to the title of the bill, and it says nothing about, I mean, maybe I'm missing the word education in the title of the bill. And it's pointed out if I'm missing that word, but it just seems weird to me to have a bill that has two full sections and it's not even addressed in the title. I feel like I got a bait and switch here, but whatever. I'm just, this is a very unusual bill. Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Vice Chair. Yeah, I think that might be something for the drafters to consider if we do a CS is specifying that. I think it's a technical and conforming change, but even so, it does add the word education and thus probably should be in the title. Are there other questions or comments? Senator Tobin.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Hayes, I'm just curious. When we apply for a permanent fund dividend, there's a series of attestations that we must make about our residency and whether we've been missing from the state for a period of days. And then you get into questions about Pick, Click, Give and the education raffle. Where do you envision this question will be? As we know, there is a behavior that occurs when folks see one thing and then subsequent requests diminish the size of their permanent fund. So within those priorities, where would this lie?
Through the chair to Senator Tobin, I believe it would probably be under the education raffle, and I would hope that the senior community, the last commission on aging and other groups would spread the word to the supporters and friends to let them know about this program, and also hopefully the Division of Senior Services will do public service announcements and so forth, and then again, it's a plethora of things that you could do for Pick, Click, and Give and for the education raffle. And we hope that this also will be able to catch fire and folks will see the use and meaning of this.
Thank you, Mr. Hayes. Follow-up, Senator Tobin.
Thank you. It's actually a separate question, and it's for on one of the fiscal notes, particularly from the permanent fund division, if we happen to have them online.
They are not online, unfortunately, but we could – if you could ask your question, Senator, maybe we could refer to them later.
Yes. So in their fiscal note, it's an indeterminate one because they say they're unable to estimate the one-time programming costs. However, as Mr. Hayes noted, 7 years ago, we reprogrammed the Pick, Click, Give application, the PFD application to include the education raffle. So it seems odd that they wouldn't have at least some understanding or idea of what the programming costs would entail.
Do you have any comment on that, Mr. Hayes?
Yes, and through the chair to Senator Tobin, this is a response that was given to the other body. DOR had submitted an indeterminate fiscal note for this legislation. The division's application system is currently being upgraded to a new system that is unable to forecast what the programming costs for this requested program logic will require at this time. There were programming costs associated with the initial 2018 implementation of the raffle, including the purchase of a raffle drum and other startup material. Since then, annual expenses have been limited to ticket purchasing and printing, advertising, auditing, and a few other minor costs. The total for startup and ongoing material costs since 2020 is $43,070.31, paid for the 2% allocated for administrative and promotion under AS 4323.230A. This price does not reflect the number of hours put in for by DOR staff to plan or administer the raffle process.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Hayes. And I'll note that the next committee referral after this one is finance, and I'm sure that they will ask for more detail from the department on that point exactly. Any further questions? All right. Not seeing any. With that, we are going to set the bill aside. Thank you for coming, Mr. Hayes. We will hear this bill again sometime soon. Take a brief at ease while we set up for the next bill. Back on the record, finally, we have an introductory hearing today on HCR4, Myositis Awareness Month. Here to introduce the resolution, we have Representative Sadler and his staff, Dolores Neal. They're already at the table. So if you would please put yourself on the record and begin your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Good afternoon, members of the Senate Health and Social Services Committee. For the record, I'm Representative Dan Sadler, House District 24, Chugiak, Eagle River, Birchwood, and Thunderbird Heights. Mr. Chairman, in addition to our responsibilities as legislators, we often have opportunities, including raising public awareness, guiding public opinion, and maybe bending the arc of public health to the good. That's the basis for HCR4 to establish Myositis Awareness Month in Alaska. Real briefly, myositis is a rare autoimmune disease. It causes a person's immune system to attack their very own muscles, results in chronic inflammation, weakness, and pain. It is a particularly challenging disease because it's often difficult to diagnose, and as long as it goes undiagnosed, it goes untreated. Now, the HCR passed in my body last year. It is my hope that with passage in the Senate, which I can say here, I can say Senate, not the body, in the Senate, that this would help Alaskans recognize the symptoms of myositis and get treatment sooner, to help build general awareness of the disease in Alaska, to help promote further research nationally, and to help doctors better understand its symptoms and treatment options, and finally, most importantly, to bring hope to those affected. I could go on and on, but I think it's going to be helpful to hear from experts on this disease, including some constituents who first raised this issue with me, this issue, and brought the legislation to my mind. So with that, I would be glad to answer questions or to retreat and offer the invited testimony. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Representative. Are there any questions for the representative or a staff before we go to invited testimony? I'm not seeing any. So now we will – do we still need the brief at ease? Okay. We've got everyone. Okay. Very good. So we have on Teams Ms. Laura Volden from the Myositis Association. And then also in the room we have Dominique, Christine, and Addie Johnson. Are any of them going to join at the table?
We'd swap out if we could, Mr. Chair. The three seats, there's three of the Johnson family, if that would work.
Great, let's do that. Absolutely. So if you guys would like to come forward. Representative, do you have a preference on who goes first, the room or the teams?
Possibly Ms. Volden. She's on teams.
Okay. So we'll start with Ms. Volden, and then we'll go to the folks in the room. So Ms. Volden, if you would please put yourself on the record and begin your testimony.
Thank you, Chair and Committee. My name is Laura Bolton, and I'm actually a resident from the state of Alaska for 25 years. I am 55 years old, and I have inclusion body myositis, or IBM. IBM is one of the six types of myositis, including juvenile. Altogether, it's estimated that approximately 75,000 individuals in the U.S. are affected with a type of idiopathic inflammatory myopathy, and IBM accounts for approximately 30,000 of these. It's interesting that that's about the same number as people affected with ALS, yet everybody knows what ALS is, and hardly anybody has heard of IBM. So this bill that or HCR4 that we're asking for is kind of a first step in to try to change that. The Myositis Association is working on a Proclamation 50 and asking each state to declare May as Myositis Awareness Month to make people more aware. As Representative Sadler indicated, most doctors haven't heard of these diseases and don't understand how to diagnose or manage them. It will take most patients about 5 years to get a proper diagnosis, and my path to diagnosis started 7 years ago. At that time, I was choking frequently on food or having something go down the wrong pipe. I struggled to turn doorknobs or open jars, and although I had hiked and climbed mountains constantly, I was suddenly falling down when I was walking on a flat surface, or my leg would just go out while I was descending stairs. Because IBM is rare and most frequently affects men over 60, it seemed pretty unlikely, but a few years and many doctor's visits and tests later, it was definitive. I had inclusion body myositis with dysphagia. IBM is a progressive, relentless, neuromuscular degenerative disease. For IBM, there's no treatment, and as of today, there is no cure. It impacts all of my skeletal muscles and many of my involuntary ones. I have like holes in my muscles, and I continue to get more and more vacuoles. So it just continues to deteriorate. 8 years ago, I ran 2 marathons. Today, I can barely walk a mile with a rollator. I'm currently sitting in a wheelchair. I can't raise my arms above my head. I can't get out of my chair or on or off a toilet. It impacts my finger flexors, which means I can't tie my shoes, blow my nose, hold a pen or a book, or sign my name. I don't have the strength to open my fridge or to hold a glass to get a drink of water. My throat muscles are weakening, as well as my jaw, making chewing and swallowing more difficult. Pills are impossible. If I get a cold, I don't have the strength to cough, which means I'm dry heaving. Pneumonia through aspiration is most likely my cause of death. Still, I'm grateful for today because I know it's only going to be getting worse. It's a complicated disease and requires me to work with a lot of specialists, all of who are generally learning about IBM for the first time when I walk through the door. The good ones work with me. When I was diagnosed, none of my families or friends have heard of IBM or any of the myositis, and some didn't know what to say or do, and so consequently, they said nothing. I'm prepared for what IBM means for me, but I was unprepared for how lonely it would be. Neither myself nor you can change the fact that I have IBM, but what you can do, what I'm asking of you, is to make it less of a mystery and less isolating for those of us that have it. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Volden. Are there any questions for Ms. Volden? I actually have one. So what is the diagnosis? What is the process to get a diagnosis? What are the tests that whereby people establish that someone has myositis?
Through the chair, it starts with a blood test. There's a CPK that they measure that for most people is under 200, and mine's 1700, which they thought maybe it was just because I had worked out, but that continued to remain high. They do a swallow study because about half of us that have it, our throat muscles are impacted, which makes the choking and the difficulty of swallowing. So they do a swallow study. They do a EMG and they do an EKG because it can sometimes impact the heart. They do pulmonary respiratory because it affects a lot of lungs and breathing and your diaphragm. And the definitive final diagnosis is a muscle biopsy where they find the vacuoles.
Got it. Thank you very much for that description.
Thank you.
Any other questions? Okay. Thank you, Ms. Volden. Please stay with us, and we might have more questions in a moment. But first, we are going to go to Ms. Dominique, Christine, and Mr. Addie Johnson. Or maybe I might have got that wrong. Who is, are you Addie?
Dominique.
Oh, you're Dominique.
Dominique, Addie, and Christine. Addie.
Okay, my fault. No. So if you don't mind, please put yourself on the record and begin your testimony.
All right. Good afternoon, Chair Dunbar, members of the Senate Health and Social Services Committee. For the record, my name is Dominique Johnson, and I'm here today with my wife, Christine, and daughter, Addie. We are residents of Juneau, and we are here to speak in support of HCR4 proclaiming May as Myositis Awareness Month. 4 years ago, our family's lives changed when our daughter Addie was diagnosed with juvenile myositis, or JM, when she was 4 years old. Juvenile myositis is a rare, chronic, and often misunderstood autoimmune disease that causes her immune system to attack healthy muscles and skin. The disease affects about 1 in 500,000 kids.
For the record, my name is Christine Johnson. Since her diagnosis, Addie has faced countless hospital visits to see specialists at Seattle Children's Hospital and George Washington University Research Hospital in D.C. She's had multiple blood draws, IVs, and extensive tests. Multiple treatments and lists of medications such as methotrexate, which is a low-dose chemotherapy injection, high-dose steroids, and a monthly 13-hour infusion, just to name a few. Addie has experienced more days of discomfort and fatigue than any child should ever have to endure. Like many families, it took us more than 4 months and multiple specialists in Alaska and in the lower 48 just to get an accurate diagnosis. Because myositis is rare and complex, treatment delays are common and permanent muscle damage can happen before anyone even knows what's wrong. Due to JM's rarity, there are no FDA-approved treatments, causing families to have to fight to get additional approval of medications from insurance providers, adding additional hoops to jump through. Awareness and education are critical, not just for families, but for doctors, nurses, and caregivers across Alaska.
Through this journey, we found a lifeline in the Cure JM Foundation, an organization dedicated to families like ours. They give us community. They gave us hope. They reminded us that we are not alone. In August 2024, we worked with our friends and community here in Juneau to organize a fundraiser called Kicks to Cure JM at the Juneau Karate Academy. It brought together families and community members who wanted to learn more and make a difference. It showed us that when people understand the fight, they want to help. We were amazed and humbled by the support from friends, neighbors, and even people we don't know. Proof that with more awareness, there can be more understanding and help for families like ours. My wife and I have watched our daughter fight each day with incredible courage, and we have also felt the deep frustrations that come with battling an invisible illness. Where outside observers often see a normal 8-year-old, not the struggle of a kid who is fighting her own immune system. Our daughter continues to face each day with incredible bravery and strength, but she shouldn't have to fight alone. By proclaiming May as Myositis Awareness Month, you can help shine a light on this rare disease. You can help raise awareness, inspire new research, and give hope to families right here in Alaska and across the country. We are grateful to Representative Sadler for introducing this resolution, and we urge your support. This may be a rare disease, but the families living with it are not rare. Declaring May as Myositis Awareness Month ensures they are seen and not overlooked. Thank you for giving us the opportunity to share our story.
Thank you. Addie, would you like to say something?
For the record, my name is Addie Johnson. I'm 8 years old, and I have something called juvenile myositis. That means my body attacks my muscles, and it can make them really weak and hurt a lot. Sometimes I can't run and play the same way as other kids do. Some days, even getting up or walking feels really hard. I have to take strong medications and go to a lot of doctor's appointments. I've had to be really brave even when I feel scared or tired. There are days I wish my body looked like everyone else's, but I still try my best to keep going and be strong. Even with all of this, I do karate and compete. I've finished 2 5Ks, and right now I'm trying to be faster than my dad. There are other kids like me who feel this way too, and sometimes it can feel really lonely. That's why awareness matters. When people know about myositis, it helps kids like me feel seen and understood. I hope you will help by making May Myositis Awareness Month in Alaska, so kids like me know we're not alone. Thank you for listening to me.
Thank you very much, Addie. Is there any questions for any of the testifiers here? I don't see any. So thank you again for coming, everyone, and thank you, Ms. Volden, as well. We are going to set this bill aside, and we will bring it up again very soon. And I'm sorry, we have a question from Ms. Tobin. Senator Tobin.
Thank you. Thank you, Senator Dunbar. I just want to know if for the bill sponsor, if it's okay if we strike 2025 so it makes May in perpetuity.
Representative Sadler, yes, assuredly. In both places in the bill, title and body.
Thank you.
Okay. Well, that might be an amendment we can offer at the next hearing. So thank you again.
Thank you.
Thank you very much, Addie. You did great. All right. With that, let me get back in my... The next meeting of the Senate Health and Social Services Committee will be held on Thursday, March 19th. At that meeting, we will have a presentation on the rising cost of health care, as well as an introductory hearing on SB 276, contraceptives insurance coverage, sponsored by this committee. Thank you, everyone, for a productive hearing. This meeting is adjourned at 4:12 p.m.